pure and we, you know, perform our worship with fire. We can utilize its purity to worship the Lord. And and you know, because it sort of has that tendency to be able to remain pure, you know, then it's a representative of the Lord. And of course, the sun god, that is, he is in control of a fire in the form of sun. That is the biggest fire in the universe. gradually we then understand that the source of, you know, all the powerful energies in this universe is coming from Lord Vishnu. So, you know, there's a progressive understanding there. But none of that is possible without first approaching the spiritual master. Being called by the spiritual master, the student should study the Vedic mantras regularly. Every day before beginning his studies and at the end of his studies, the disciple should fully offer respectful obeisances under the spiritual master. So the spiritual master is teaching the Vedas. You know, the whole process of learning to control the mind and senses and practicing celibacy and taking shelter of the spiritual masters so one can become elevated in the transcendental knowledge all the way up to Krishna. Ultimately, as Krishna says in the Gita, that by all the Vedas I am to be known. You know, without you know, being properly respectful to the spiritual master, then, you know, without proper faith and service to the spiritual master, then the Vedic knowledge is not understood, because, you know, they're called the revealed scriptures. Revealed scriptures means that the knowledge is revealed to one. You can't just read them. You get the blessings of the spiritual master and the blessings of the Lord, and then the Vedic mantras are revealed at that. So it's not just like our academic education, where you just literally you've got to remember something, and the spiritual teacher can be a fool, and one can be very disrespectful to the teacher. It makes no difference. You've just got to remember something. But Vedas are not like that. They're actually revealed to one. Krishna is revealed gradually, progressively, on different levels through the Vedas. And if the proper etiquettes are not followed, then Krishna does not become revealed in any of his aspects. So then, carrying pure kusa grass in hand, the brahmachari should dress regularly with a belt of straw and with deerskin garments. He should wear matted hair, carry a rod and water pot, and be decorated with sacred thread as recommended in the shastras. So, you know, we learn from the very beginning of life that we don't need much possessions, you know, to function. Nor should we be too preoccupied with the body. So, you know, either the hair is either cut off, or we let it grow and don't touch it. And this way, you know, keeping simple life. The brahmachari, and of course these things are then carried over to grihastha life. The brahmachari should go out morning and evening to collect alms, and he should offer all that he collects to the spiritual master. He should eat only if ordered to take food by the spiritual master. Otherwise, if the spiritual master does not give his order, he may sometimes have to fast. So, you know, the properly speaking, you know, one asks the spiritual master's permission, and if that's not given, one fast, one goes without. He does not ask, "Can I eat?" They just pass. And they're collecting alms. And in this way, the spiritual master is, you know, the Brahmana is, the spiritual master is a Brahmana. They accept charity and they utilize that charity, you know, for the benefit of spreading Vedic culture. A brahmachari should be quite well behaved and gentle and should not eat or collect more than necessary. He must be active and expert, fully believing in the instructions of the spiritual master and the shastra. Fully controlling his senses, he should associate only as much as necessary with women or those controlled by women. Yeah, and so you see, you know, I spoke on this a little bit the other day, chapter 12, the word daksha, expert, daksha, expert, without lazy, always busy, and that, you know, Prabhupada was explaining that in reference to this exact verse, that a devotee knows something about everything and everything about something. Specifically everything about devotional service, but also, you know, they're expert in some particular field. He considered that, and he gave examples how Raghunath Das Goswami, when the government tax collectors came, there was some dispute between his father and uncle and the government over taxes. And he handled it so nicely that everyone was satisfied. So it was a bit of, you know, politics, diplomacy. Raghunath Das Goswami was a very, you know, renowned person. And he uses that as an example that, you know, how if a devotee does not know how to deal with the material world, he says that's careless. That's not Krishna consciousness, he says. That's the example he gives. It's not Krishna consciousness. It's carelessness. So this is where here, daksha. So, you know, what to speak of grihasthas. How a grihastha could use an excuse, you know, that I don't know how to function in the world because, you know, somehow I don't think about those things because I'm always chanting Hare Krishna and reading the Bhagavatam and this, that and the other, so, you know, I don't know how to deal. So, you know, from the very beginning of life, a devotee should be trained to be very expert in dealing with the material world. From brahmachari. I said to you know, the light over in the room where I keep my paraphernalia hasn't been working for some years. But in the last couple of months it got worse, and you know, I couldn't see at all because I don't even see that well when I've got my glasses on. So I've mentioned it to every devotee who has something connection with management. The light in here doesn't work and it's impossible to function, especially if I open my locker, it's just dark. And I was just seeing what would happen. Anyway, one devotee amongst all those over many, many months, Param Brahma, he went, I came in, I think it was yesterday morning, and I saw it fixed and I thought, yeah, amongst all the persons that I told, I thought, I bet Param Brahma did that, and he did. Mm. Yeah. And, you know, so just, you know, so little expertise, you know. And not that, oh, you know, I'm a brahmachari, you know, I don't know how to do anything, you know. You know, there's only certain things I've been trained up in, like, you know, so very expert, you know, in his dealings with me, and with management, because he tried to get them to do it and there was nothing. Lights were on, but no one was home. And so he did it himself. So, and you know, he even, you know, put a few screws in there just to hold it, because it was sort of the whole thing. So, you know, this is... that's proper. That's, you know, to be expected from every devotee, you know, that sort of behaviour, you know, very expert in their dealings and abilities, not incompetent in the name of Krishna consciousness. And you know, associating with women, where it's required, otherwise, you know, avoiding that. It's not as if they're anti-women. As, you know, one brahmachari said to Prabhupada, you know, very difficult working in the kitchen because of the women are disturbing. Prabhupada said, then don't go in there. You know, if it's disturbing, don't go into the kitchen. It's like, you know, it's not their problem. You've got a problem, you know. You either learn to control your mind and senses or keep out. It's up to you. You know, to become expert, to deal with the, you know, to associate where it's required to for your service. Otherwise, if you're not that expert, then you don't go in. Others can. And, you know, this firm faith in the instructions of the spiritual master and the Shastras. You know, someone asked Srila Prabhupada. This is one of the differences between, you know, what Prabhupada found when he was preaching in the West and when he was preaching in India. You know, he would speak that he was the Bhagavad Gita presented by Vyasadeva in the Acharya, and that was enough, everyone would accept. One time he was in India and... they ask the question, you know, how is it that, you know, Vyasadeva wasn't there when Bhagavad Gita was spoken? How is it that he wrote this book? And and then later, you know, presented back to Arjuna. Prabhupada said, you know, he said, I'm not so learned as you are, so I accept the Acharyas. And all the Acharyas accept that Vyasadeva has presented the Bhagavad Gita, and so we accept that. You know. All the Acharyas, the spiritual master, they all accept that Srila Vyasadeva has presented. So that's enough. You know, we just have that faith. You know, Ramanuja, Madhvacharya, Sankaracharya, they've all accepted Vyasadeva's presented this. There's no one's ever questioned it, but he's questioning it. But anyway, he said then, Sanjaya was a disciple of Vyasadeva, so then you should be able to understand how Vyasadeva presented it. So if his disciple is able to perceive something from a distance, then why not the guru? But that, you know, that must be there. A brahmachari, or one who has not accepted the grihastha ashram, family life, must rigidly avoid talking with women or about women, for the senses are so powerful that they may agitate even the mind of a sannyasi, a member of the renounced order of life. You know, rigid avoiding talk with women or about women. You know, or reading literature concerning talks about men and women, as mentioned in the purport. Prabhupada says here, the entire Vedic system teaches one to avoid sex life so that one may gradually progress from brahmacharya to grihastha to vanaprastha, to sannyas, and thus give up material enjoyment, which is the original cause of bondage to this material world. The word brihadbratha refers to one who has decided not to marry, or in other words, not to indulge in sex life throughout his entire life. And, you know, it is mentioned, Prabhupada will quite often, you know, speak, quote Chanakya Pandit, that, is it Chanakya Pandit? It may even be in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that, you know, one should not, I think it, you know, the Vedic injunction actually, that, you know, one should not, you know, be in a secluded place even with one's mother, one's sister, or one's daughter. And then Prabhupada says, one may think, oh, that's for those who are perhaps not very elevated. But the injunction is, even if one is very intelligent, you know, wise, you know, person, even for someone on that level. So, you know, the injunction is there. And of course, you know, the injunctions are sometimes hard to understand, that, you know, how is it that, you know, how can you even conceive that thoughts of sex will enter your mind when you're with you, you know. Such persons, but of course, you know, generally, you know, generally, when you're talking with women from any section, you know, there's a lot of, you know, talks about the social life around them. You know, they'll talk about, you know, there was a wedding here and this one here, and did you hear that so-and-so broke up with so-and-so? And, you know, so even hearing them, you know, talking to them, you know, it is, you do hear a lot of things related to, you know, society, and of course society is all based upon sex life and, you know, who's having sex with who and whatever like that, you know. It's like, you know, Prabhupada one time, he was in India and, this gentleman, you know, brought in, you know, his wife, here's my wife, and here's my daughter, and here's her husband, and, you know, here's my son, here's his, and these are her children like that. Prabhupada turned to his disciples and said, here is my sex life. So, you know, it's, we don't always see, you know, the danger in something, but the scriptures are, pointing out that even for a very intelligent and, you know, well-cultured person, be very, very careful. Text number 8. If the wife of the spiritual master is young, a young brahmachari should not allow her to care for his hair, massage his body with oil, or bathe him with affection like a mother. So Prabhupada mentions, you know, the relationship between the student or disciple and the wife of the spiritual master or teacher is like that between son and mother. And she is one of the natural mothers, Guru Patni. Mm. But if she's young, you know, the brahmachari has to avoid allowing the mother to touch him, and it's strictly prohibited. Mm. And it says there in the purport, unnecessary association with women, even with one's mother, sister or daughter, is strictly prohibited. This is human civilization. A civilization that allows men to mix unrestrictedly with women is an animal civilization. In Kali Yuga, people are extremely liberal, but mixing with women and talking with them as equals actually constitutes an uncivilized way of life. So it mentions here, women is compared to fire, man is compared to a butter pot. Therefore, a man should avoid associating even with one's own daughter in a secluded place. Similarly, he should also avoid association with other women. Well, there you go, there it is. And one should associate with women only for important business and not otherwise. Prabhupada says, if one cannot understand the basic principle of restraining association between man and woman, he is to be considered an animal. That is the purpose of this fourth verse. As long as the living entity is not completely self-realized, as long as he is not independent in the misconception of identifying with his body, which is nothing but a reflection of the original body in senses, he cannot be relieved of the conception of duality, which is epitomized by the duality between man and woman. Thus, there is every chance that he will fall down because his intelligence is bewildered. So, as Prabhupada points out, here's another important warning. So, unless we're completely self-realized, we'll be on the platform of duality. The bodily, the spiritual platform is above duality, and of course the bodily platform is dealing with this material world, which is the platform of duality, and that is epitomized by man and woman. And so that means that there is a certain amount of it means that the intelligence is bewildered. So as soon as we're thinking in terms of duality of the material world, we must understand our intelligence is in a vulnerable situation, likely to make mistakes, likely to be overcome by illusion and foolishness. He quotes that verse. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. On the spiritual platform, the learned person not only gives up the duality of man and woman, but also gives up the duality of man and animal. This is the test of self-realization. One must realize perfectly that living being is spirit soul, but is tasting various types of material bodies. One may theoretically understand this, but when one has practical realization, then he actually becomes a pundit, one who knows. And therefore, so as you can see, a pundit is a brahmana. So the Prabhupada says in many places in his books that it's not possible to become a Vaishnava until one becomes a Brahmana. So you see here that becoming a Brahmana, not that I've been given twice born, I've got the sacred, I'm allowed to worship the deity now and boss people around. When Prabhupada says one must become a Brahmana, it means that one must come to self-realization, I am a spirit soul, and every other living entity is a spirit soul, and therefore I am no longer seeing things according to the duality. Now, unless one comes to that platform, there's no question becoming a Vaishnava. See? So whether one, even if one serves Krishna, doing the work that Sudras would do, or Vaishyas would do, or Chatras would do, or Brahmins, it makes no difference. They all have to come to that point of Brahman realization. Otherwise, they cannot become a Vaishnava. They have to be above, they have to come to the basic point of spiritual, platform, which is understanding I am a spirit soul, everyone else is a spirit soul, and that's the basic principle by which we can then begin to engage in devotional service properly. Yeah. Until that time, the duality continues and the conception of man and woman also continues. In this stage, one should be extremely careful about mixing with women. No one should think himself perfect and forget the Shastric injunction that one should be very careful about associating even with his daughter, mother or sister, not to speak of other women. Now, Madhvacharya cites this verse. Unity in variety is real knowledge, and therefore giving up variety artificially does not reflect perfect knowledge of monism. According to a Chinchabeda philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are varieties, but all of them can constitute one unit. Such is knowledge of perfect oneness. And we discussed that, you know, last week. Someone was asking the question, I think Sri Ram, that, you know, how do we treat people in our movement? Some are Brahmanas, you know, some are not Brahmanas, you know, some are women, some are men, some are Brahmacharis, some are, you know, we're supposed to be on the spiritual platform and not distinguish, you know, see? And as we discussed that point about being very expert, no, we have to distinguish. Actually, it's foolishness or, you know, carelessness not to distinguish between, you know, so here it's giving the same information that, you know, proper knowledge means variety in knowledge. You know, so here is the spirit soul in the body of a brahmana, here is the spirit soul in the body of a brahmachari, here is the spirit soul in the body of a woman, here is the spirit soul in the body of an elephant, here is the spirit soul in the body of a tiger. See? So there's the oneness and the variety. That's proper knowledge. Not that, oh, I can only see spirits and souls, you know. I didn't know it was a tiger. That's how I got my arm ripped off. You know? That's how I got my arm chewed off. No, the variety, you know, that's proper knowledge, to perceive the variety, you know, both on the spiritual platform and the material platform. These things must be there. So, you know, here it's saying, so in other words, if someone said, I see everyone as a spirit soul, you know, there's a woman, there's a man, I'll associate with them equally the same way. Well, that's not proper. You know, one may argue that real spiritual advancement means that I don't notice you're a woman or a man, and I just see you as a spirit soul, you know. But here, it's actually saying, no, you have to notice. You have to know, you know, one's a woman, one's a man. Be very careful in your association, you know, for men, for with women, and women with men. You have to, you know, you actually have to notice. You know, don't be unconscious. And at the same time, you have to be, you know, become fixed up on the platform of self-realization that still there's a spirit soul in either body. But despite that, we're not in the spiritual world, and we have to follow these Vedic injunctions. So you can see its misapplication can be there by in many different ways of not dealing properly with people according to their situation in this world, men and women, and you know, brahmanas and you know, sannyasis, and that. We have to deal with them as they, you know, they are. There's an interesting story about you know, because if when you have devotees who are very, very elevated, you know, they're properly fixed up on the platform of self-realization, God-realization, then, you know, some of the usual etiquettes they may dismiss. But not so much, but carefully, you know, because, you know, as Uttama Adhikaris generally follow the ways of the Madhyama Adhikari in order, because people are learning from their behaviour and their activities. So, you know, if there's sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would, be a little relaxed in his behaviour, but if certain people externally may not have understood. He would be very much more strict, depends who was in his company. I said that, Rupa Goswami, I think it was, that Mirabai wanted to visit him. And he said, oh, I don't associate with women. And she said, oh, as far as I've understood, there's only one male and all the rest of us are female. He said, that's right, I've made a mistake. And so, you know, he had some, he, you know. So, you know, he could understand, I'm not dealing with an ordinary woman, I'm dealing with someone who's very, you know, self-realized, and, you know, so that's okay. So, you know, this has to be applied. Don't be critical of Rupa Goswami and Mirabai because they're obviously, if you're on the platform of self-realization and it's not a problem, but it's not to be done lightly because other people may imitate, and otherwise we should be careful. But as you can imagine, there's hundreds of different ways. You know, its proper application will be rare, and there's hundreds of different ways this will be misapplied in ISKCON. And that's what we live with until we gradually get our Dai Vivan Ashram College. All the rules and regulations apply equally to the householder and the sannyasi, the member of the renounced order of life. The Grihasthas, however, is given permission to the spiritual master to indulge in sex during the favourable period favourable for procreation. The Prabhupada says it is sometimes misunderstood that a Grihastha household is permitted to indulge in sex at any time. This is a wrong conception of Grihastha life. In spiritual life, whether one is Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa, or Brahmachari, everyone is under the control of the spiritual master. And of course, you know, Prabhupada said, you know, what does it mean to be twice initiated, you know, to take Brahman? It means now, you know, he says, what does the sacred thread indicate? Or, you know, it means that now I'm under the control of the spiritual master. Twice born means now I'm under the control of the spiritual master. For the brahmacharis and sannyasis, there are strong restrictions on sexual indulgence. And similarly, there are strong restrictions for grihasthas. A grihastha should indulge in sex life only in accordance with the order of the guru. When the spiritual master orders, the grihasthas may accept sex life. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.11. Dhamma viruddha bhutta shukam mushmi. Indulgence in sex life without disobedience to the religious rules and regulations constitutes a religious principle. So it says the Grihastha must obtain permission from the spiritual master to observe the ritualistic ceremony of Garbhadhan Samskara. Then he may approach his wife to get children, not otherwise. A brahmana generally remains a brahmachari throughout his entire life. But although some brahmanas become Grihasthas and indulge in sex life, they do so under the complete control of the spiritual master. So Prabhupada mentions in his lectures on this point that therefore he's also brahmachari. That is also brahmachari. The chachari is allowed to marry more than one wife, but this must also be in accordance with the instructions of the spiritual master. So, you know, that's interesting because I've had different devotees over the course of time say that, you know, in the Bhagavatam, you know, you're allowed to take more than one wife. First one must be a chapter, one must be able to afford to look after two wives, and one must be capable of looking after two wives. And one has to get the instruction of the spiritual master because sometimes it is actually being done. Well, it's been, they just want to do it because they read something in the Bhagavad Gita. I read something there, you can have two wives. Sounds like me. In spiritual life, one must conduct one's whole life under the guidance of the Guru. Only one who executes his spiritual life under the direction of the spiritual master can achieve the mercy of Krishna. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada. If one desires to advance his spiritual life, but he acts whimsically, not following the orders of the spiritual master, he has no shelter. Without the spiritual master's order, even the grihastha should not indulge in sex life. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada mentions that. So, you know, that's spiritual life. You know, one time I was listening to a lecture the other day that someone, Prabhupada was preaching in India, and someone said that, you know, so what is the situation of those who practice bhakti but they haven't got a spiritual master? And Prabhupada said, without a spiritual master, there is no bhakti. There is no question of bhakti. And so, you know, this is very, very, as you see here, you know, that the spiritual master is pivotal in the devotee's life. And we sing that prayer every day. Brahmacharis or grihasthas who have taken the vow of celibacy as described above should not indulge in the following. Applying powder or ointment to the eyes, massaging the head with oil, massaging the body with the hands, seeing a woman or painting a woman's picture, eating meat, drinking wine, decorating the body with flower garlands, smearing scented ointment on the body, or decorating the body with ornaments. These they should give up. One should realize that in the fire, in the spiritual master, in oneself, and in all living entities, in all circumstances and conditions, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu has simultaneously entered and not entered. He is situated externally. What? Did I leave something out? One should realize that in the fire, in the spiritual master, in oneself, and in all living entities, in all circumstances and conditions. Oh, did I miss one?
Yeah.
Okay. I've jumped to that one. So I've missed 13, 14. Oh, yeah.
According to the rules and regulations.
According to the rules and regulations mentioned above, one who is twice born, namely Brahma, Kshatriya, and Vaishya, should reside in the Gurukul under the care of the spiritual master. Then he should study and learn all the Vedic literatures, along with the supplements and the Upanishads, according to his ability and power to study. If possible, the student or disciple should reward the spiritual master with the remuneration the spiritual master requests. And then following the master's order, the disciple should leave and accept one of the other ashrams, namely the Grihastha ashram, Vanaprastha Sannyas ashram, as he desires. So he says, to study the Vedas, this is the purport, and understand them, of course, requires some special intelligence. But the members of the three higher sections of society must learn the Vedic literature according to their capability and power to understand. In other words, studying the Vedic literatures is compulsory for everyone but the sudras and the anjujas. Vedic literature gives the knowledge that can lead one to understand the absolute truth, Brahman, Paramount, or Bhagavan. And Gurukul, or the reformatory education institution, should be used only to understand Vedic knowledge. Yeah. So, here, you know, although the Gurukul is compulsory, of course, one can only study up to their capability. One time, I think it might have been the may have been the Vrindavan Gurukul. not sure which one it was. One of the teachers having a room conversation with Srila Prabhupada and describing that one of the students, was sort of just couldn't sit and concentrate and study. And Prabhupada said, so then, so he was wondering what measures he could use to somehow coerce the boy to behave in class. And Prabhupada said, no. Put him in the field, let him plough the field, do something. He's obviously, that's not suited for, that. So don't force him to do something. In other words, that's just beyond his capability, And so find that which he's more suited for. He obviously wants to, expand a lot of physical energy and stuff. So he was suggesting perhaps, he could learn agriculture and things like that. So it's one of the difficulties I've seen in Gurukuls that have been established, the ones that I've seen, is that it becomes compulsory and, there are many children who don't fit into that. They fit into it to a certain degree, but not to the same degree as everyone else. And we shouldn't try and put all of them into the same slot. And the teachers and the, should learn to recognise that. There's also a difference between how, girls reside in a Brahmacharini ashram at the age of 5 and 6 years old compared to little boys, So it's just for some little girls, it's just like hell to be separated from the mother, So, but from what I've seen, that has not been acknowledged. That, it's just been that there's something wrong with the child or, the parents, their capability has to be taken. So we might say that, Gurukul is compulsory, but that doesn't mean that, we should force someone to do something beyond their capability or inclination. That's a whole different ballgame. And sometimes that compulsory aspect, that when Prabhupada's saying compulsory, or Prabhupada says it's compulsory. That's a, I remember one time, because I had 5 girls, so they, in New Zealand, they said to me, I didn't want to put my girls in Gurukul because I knew it was wrong for them. They just, it would actually turn them against Krishna, which it did to a lot, and to a big degree. It's one of the main things that really sort of hurt their spiritual life. And I was told that if I didn't put them into the Gurukul, I would have to leave the community. There's literally, I would not be accepted as a devotee in that community. These are the sort of thing, because, and they were saying compulsory. And I said, so let's have a meeting because I want to bring a letter from Prabhupada where Prabhupada says it's not compulsory. And because one time, I think Prabhupada was an American, there was one little boy, and the father said, I just don't want to put him in Gurukul like that. And Prabhupada said, look, it's voluntary, So if you don't think it's right, he doesn't have to. So I was going to take that letter there. So what do you think they did? They cancelled the meeting. Anyway. But, it's all in Prabhupada's books, but, sometimes, it's very easy to twist something. Compulsory, I understood compulsory as this, is that we can't afford to run the Gurukul unless we get a certain amount of parents and money. So, so therefore, it's compulsory, Prabhupada said. But really it was a financial matter, So actually what I did was, I actually became the cook in the Gurukul so that I could, see, the children every morning and make sure that they weren't, missing. every day I was cooking their breakfast and their lunch and their dinner. And that was my wife, yeah. But you know, it was really a misunderstanding, you know. I mean, I understood from the very beginning, you know, that people are misquoting the Bhagavatam, but so, you know, it's very helpful for the society if we, you know, understand what Prabhupada has presented, which is not always what ISKCON is, you know, presenting. One should realize that in fire, in the spiritual master, in oneself, and in all living entities, in all circumstances and conditions, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu has simultaneously entered and not entered. He is situated externally in and internally as the full controller of everything. So as we described, that you know, realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead omnipresence is the perfect realization of the Absolute Truth to be attained through the study of the Vedic literatures. So he's within the universe, within the heart of every living entity, within the atom. And when he's present with all his paraphernalia, including his name, form, associates and servants. So, you know, at the moment, you know, the super soul is in our heart, along with Prabhupada, all the other acharyas. They're all there. That's quite a concept, isn't it? And all the paraphernalia that they require for their, you know. You know, therefore, you know, we can understand that the spiritual master is always able to know the, you know, the situation, you know, of the disciple. If the spiritual master is properly situated in relationship with Krishna, then the super soul, through the super soul, they're able to actually, you know, have an understanding of what the disciple requires in their spiritual life. We're almost up to exam time. I've had a couple of interesting dreams, you know, about that sort of in the last couple of weeks. Last week, too. First one was that I was at a big function place and. Many devotees were there, and different leading devotees, you know, senior devotees led a kirtan, and then my spiritual master was there, and he said, you know, you do a little kirtan, don't be shy. And so I did some kirtan, and I thought I'd better not go too long, you know, I'm probably, you know, disturbing everyone. He said, no, I'll do some more, so let me do it, you know, for a little bit longer. But he said to me, because I was playing cartels, and I'd been working, and my arms were really tired, and so my arms sort of went down below my waist. He said, no, you keep your hands above your waist, you know, when you're holding the cartels. And my arms And then he sort of turned to me, and in a joking way, he said, I'm watching you come this way. But, you know, I thought, you know, it was an interesting, you know, that when I woke up, I thought, oh, good, you know, he's watching me, you know. So that was the main thing I enjoyed, that, oh, he's actually taken notice of me. But I had, then a couple of days later, I had this dream where, again, we're in another place, and it was a big function place, and it was time to do Guru Puja, and I had the murti of Prabhupada on his asana. And there were different senior devotees and the different people who wanted to be senior devotees, and they started sort of moving up as they do as to who would lead the kirtan, you know, to be the big devotee who leads the kirtan. And I thought to myself, they never asked me, you know, not that I'm a big devotee, but it'd be nice, you know, I can sing, you know, and I do like Prabhupada, you know. And anyway, they were sort of looking at each other, you know, like jumping in front of it, and I thought, hesitation, I'm going to leave. So I just led the kirtan, you know, and I did the Guru Puja to Srila Prabhupada. So I sort of gradually moved up. And as I moved up the front, then the murti turned into Prabhupada actually sitting there. And Prabhupada was just sort of sitting there and, you know, he's nodding, and he's enjoying the kirtan. He had these big bright eyes like that. And so I did the kirtan and the Hare Krishna kirtan. And then I sort of went to stand back to sort of, you know, get out of eyesight from everyone. And a devotee, Gangishai, go and get the blessings. So I went up front and I bowed my head to Prabhupada, and he leant down and touched me on the head, you know, and gave me his blessings. But, you know, I sort of, you know, you have that, that understanding that through the super soul, somehow, you know, the super soul is arranging that, you know, you're getting instruction and association, you know, through the spiritual master, you know, that you know that they're always sort of somehow or another they're connected to you via the arrangements of the super soul, you know. That, you know, somehow, you know, they actually do, wherever they are, they somehow, you know, they're thinking, you know, that if a disciple is somehow in difficulty, somehow they're getting that sense that, you know, and if a disciple is doing really well, they're somehow getting that sense of, you know, of that through the super soul. So it's an interesting concept, but you know, the super soul is connected with all his name, his form, his associates, all his servants. But, and so, of course, although he's everywhere, he's also remains separate from them in his personal form. But particularly in fire, the spiritual master, oneself, in all living entities and in all circumstances and conditions, the Supreme Person of God of Vishnu has simultaneously entered and not entered. So again, here, this, you know, there's this variety in knowledge, you know, because our general understanding is that, you know, God is everywhere. But there's a little variety to that. God is everywhere. He's equally everywhere, especially where the spiritual master is. It's like when you're dealing out cake, you know, to children, you get one piece and one children goes, you know, that's it. To deal it out equally, you know, and so you cut a piece. Oh, that one got, you know, that one's more equal than my one, you know. So in the spiritual master, Krishna is more equally present than he is everywhere else. In other words, in some, you know, the spirit, although Krishna is equally present everywhere, you know, sometimes I have to explain this when you do a fire yajna. You know, people know that God is everywhere, but I say, but I'm going to ask Krishna to sit here in the sacred fire, and then they'll be thinking, well, God's everywhere, why, you know, then he's already there. But the point is that although he's everywhere, he's not necessarily reciprocating with us, isn't it? So in the spiritual master, he's reciprocating with us, and through the sacred fire of that. So in through the deity. So although God is everywhere, but in certain circumstances, he's particularly there reciprocating. It's like the, you know, you can say the postal the government postal services everywhere. But there's certain times and places where the reciprocation of the government is there, and otherwise it's not. So it's like that. All right, so let's leave it there. A little bit of food for thought. So let's hope that the super soul's in your heart as you try and remember the... look, there's only a few... Look, we're almost... I'm going to finish this. There's only a few verses to go. You don't mind, do you? Thanks. By practicing in this way, whether one be a brahmachari, brahmachari ashram, grihastha ashram, vanaprastha or sannyas, one must always realise the all-pervading presence of the Supreme Lord, for in this way it is possible to understand the absolute truth. O King, I shall now describe the qualifications for a vanaprastha, one who is retired from family life. By rigidly following rules and regulations for the vanaprastha, one can easily be elevated to the upper planetary system known as Mahaloka. A person in the vanaprastha life should not eat grains grown by tilling the fields. He should also not eat grains that have grown without tilling of the field but are not fully ripe. Nor should a vanaprastha eat grains cooked in fire. Indeed, he should only eat fruit ripened by the sunshine. A vanaprastha should prepare cakes to be offered in sacrifices from fruits and grains grown naturally in the forest. When he obtains some new grains, he should give up his old stock of grains. A vanaprastha should prepare a thatched cottage or take shelter of a cave in a mountain, only to keep the sacred fire, but he should personally practice enduring snowfall, wind, fire, rain, and the shining of the sun. The vanaprastha should... This is teaching men to treat their wives nicely so they don't have to leave home too early. The vanaprastha should wear matted locks of hair on his head and let his body, hair, nails and moustache grow. He should not cleanse his body of dirt. He should keep a water pot, deer skin and rod, wear a bark of tree as a covering, yeah, and use garments coloured like fire. Being very thoughtful, a vanaprastha should remain in the forest for 12 years, 8 years, 4 years, 2 years, or at least 1 year. He should behave in such a way that he will not be disturbed or troubled by too much austerity. When, because of disease or old age, one is able to perform his prescribed duties for advancement in spiritual consciousness or study of the Vedas, he should practice fasting, not taking any food. He should properly place the fire element in his own self, and in this way give up his bodily affinity, by which one thinks the body to be oneself or one's own. One should gradually merge the material body into the five elements, earth, water, fire, air and sky. A sober, self-realized person who has full knowledge should merge the various parts of the body in their original sources. The holes in the body are caused by the sky. The process of breathing is caused by the air. The heat of the body is caused by fire and semen, blood and mucus are caused by water. The hard substances like skin, muscle and bone are caused by the earth. In this way, all the constituents of the body are caused by various elements and they should be merged again into those elements. Thereafter, the object of speech, along with the sense of speech, the tongue, should be bestowed upon fire. Craftsmanship and the two hands should be given up to the demigod Indra. The power of movement and the legs should be given up to Lord Vishnu. Sensual pleasure, along with the genitals, should be bestowed upon Prajapati. The rectum and the power, with the power of evacuation, should be bestowed in its proper place unto Mrityu. The oral instrument, along with sound vibration, should be given to the deities presiding over the directions. The instruments of touch, along with the sense objects of touch, should be given to Vayu. Form, with the power of sight, should be bestowed upon the sun. The tongue, along with the demigod Varuna, should be bestowed upon water. And the power of smell, along with the two Ashvini Kumara demigods, should be bestowed upon the earth. The mind, along with all the material desires, should be merged in the moon demigod. All the subject matters of intelligence, along with the intelligence itself, should be placed in Lord Brahma. False ego, which is under the influence of the material modes of nature and which induces one to think I am this body and everything connected with the body's mind, should be merged along with material activities in Rudra, the predominating deity of false ego. Material consciousness, along with the goal of thought, should be merged in the individual living being, and the demigods acting under the modes of material nature should be merged along with the perverted living being into the supreme being. The earth should be merged in water, water in the brightness of sun. There's brightness into the air into the sky into the false ego into the total material energy into the unmanifested ingredients, the pradhana feature, and at last the ingredient feature of material manifestation into the supersoul. When all the material designations have thus merged into the respective material elements, the living beings, who are all ultimately completely spiritual, being one quality with the Supreme Being, should cease from material existence as flames cease when the wood in which they are burning is consumed. When the material bodies return to its various material elements, only the spiritual being remains. This spiritual being is Brahman and is equal in quality with Parabrahman. Hare Krishna. Okay, let's do this exam. Yeah, a little warm up for your intelligence.